The Creative Business Podcast is brought to you by Noosey. Online proposals made simple for creative businesses. Visit noosey.com to learn how your business can start winning more projects today.
Hello and welcome to episode 1 of season 1 of the Creative Business Podcast, the podcast that aims to help you build a better, more successful creative business. My name is Nathan Powell and I'm the founder of Noosey Online Proposals, but perhaps more pertinent to this podcast, I'm a designer who for more than a decade has worked as a freelance consultant, agency employee and of course startup founder. I know how tough it can be to run your own business, so I won't be wasting your time throughout this podcast with top 10 ways to or how to 20x your revenue, but rather throughout the upcoming episodes, I'll be talking to some fantastic guests who have unique insights and skills into their area of expertise within the creative industry, helping you to improve your business within the creative industry. So let's jump straight into this week's first interview with Marcus Blankenship. Marcus is a coach, advisor, and he was actually an advisor to Noosey when we first started out, but probably most relevant for today's show, he helps agencies grow and manage their software teams. So what have I missed, Marcus?
Morning. Let's see. I do
first
a lot
of all, of actually, I should probably just say, hello, Marcus.
Hello, Nathan. How are you? I know you're doing well.
Good, man. Good, man. So tell me, what have I missed? What else are you doing? What are you up to? How are you helping these people?
You know what I noticed? I noticed that so many agency owners and freelancers, like they left a big company or even a small company and where they didn't have great bosses. And so a lot of times what they struggle with is knowing what a good boss looks like and acts like. And it's almost like parenting, I've found. Like if you grew up in a household where you didn't have great parents or you didn't have parents that you want to be like, you're left with kind of an absence of model. And so a lot of times what I'm helping folks do is A, feel comfortable with the idea that, you know, it really is okay to be the boss. If you own the company, you have a financial and an ethical responsibility to be the boss of the people that you hire. And that means treating them in a certain way. And B, like, let's come up with your style of managing, because I think it is different for everybody. Most people don't really realize there's options. So that's one of the things I try and help people with early on, is helping them to be comfortable in this new role of boss or manager, and showing them the options of how they can act versus simply acting or reacting the way they've been managed before.
Yeah, and I think it can definitely be a hard role to take on, especially, as you said, for people who are perhaps coming from another area or have come on from being a freelance consultant to suddenly having staff. I know it's certainly an area that I've never enjoyed, even on a small level. I think it can sit very, it's a role that people do struggle with.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reasons for that, but I think the biggest reason is there's this weird transition I call the maker to manager gulf. And it's like, Nathan, you are such an amazing maker of things, right? A design, and you think, and like there's all this stuff you pour yourself into. And yet when you move over to the manager side, you feel like you're leaving all of that behind, right? And there's this feeling of loss of like, well, I won't get to do it anymore. And then there's also a feeling of, well, when I tell someone to do it, it never comes out right. So, I guess lastly, if you make that transition, not only are you sort of often feeling bad that you don't get to do the work you used to love, but you're worried that you're going to be a jerk. You're worried that you're becoming something that you won't like as a person. And I've had a lot of managers and owners of companies say, well, my real skills or my marketable skills, like they've just eroded. And I'm even worried, how would I be marketable if I had to go get a job? So there's all kinds of fears that come into play there. But I just know that universally, for everyone, it's a really hard transition. But it's even harder if you love the work that you did before.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the most common areas perhaps that you see agencies suffer with when it comes to managing their teams? Because obviously when you're talking about an agency, you're talking about projects, you're talking about a certain number of personnel, of staff, and there's obviously always money involved in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the first things I see is that agency owners want to make more money. They want to grow. And so one of the places they do that most of the time, they do that by taking on larger projects and then bringing on people to help. And that's a very sane, perfectly reasonable thing to do. The problem is when they sold the project and when they talk to the client, they have a very clear picture in their mind of what the outcomes are and what all these little details should be. They have formed an idea of what the solution is going to be. And yet when they start working with their team, their contractor, their developer or designer, they oftentimes, one of the common mistakes is they don't do a good job of really sitting down and writing out what's in their brain. Instead, they'll get with the other person, they'll wave their hands, they'll sketch, maybe there's a whiteboard, they'll use lots of phrases like, yeah, you know what I mean, and you can get this, right? You get it, what we're going for here. And then they kind of do this weird thing where they don't want to micromanage, so they talk a lot, and then they go completely hands-off. And they think like, oh, I need to give this person like, oh, an amazing creative freedom. I've showed them what's in my head, and now I want to give them the elbow room to really do a great job. And I don't want to be a micromanager. And that almost always, that pattern, I see it over and over and over again. It's problematic on two sides. One, they didn't really communicate what the client needed and what their vision was because they didn't write it down. I mean, just talking and saying, you get it, don't you? And you know, we'll put up some landing pages and they'll be right on brand. And yeah, that's what, you know, that all that kind of stuff. It's great aspirational talk, but it's impossible for somebody to read your mind. So stop imagining that people are just going to get it. And then don't go to the other side of that problem, which is just to take your hands off and say, well, I want to give people the freedom to express themselves. You know what? You're the boss. You can express yourself. But right now, you've got client work to do. And that means you're going to need to guide and direct and oversee in a pretty clear way the work that your contractor, your employee does. Because you are the one who has a promise to keep. You've promised the client some outcomes. You can't simply hope that your contractor is going to get it right the first time. So being more specific, writing things down, putting things on a schedule of milestones, and checking in really often. I mean, like, I check in at least every day on things, and I don't just check in and say, how's it going? I say, can we get together at 9 a.m. and you can show me the design as it sits right now? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a very specific kind of check-in. And that's not micromanaging, by the way. That's just good management. The longer people work for you, the more you'll establish trust. But in the first 6 months, I think it's really irresponsible to take a very hands-off approach.
Yeah, I think that sort of setting expectations, as you said, well, not even expectations, but just saying, okay, so we're going to meet tomorrow, we're going to see the design. I mean, I can see that even from sort of a freelance design point of view, setting those expectations with the client and being able to say, let's go through this. And it's not to catch anyone out. It's not to say, oh, well, you know, you haven't done the work or you're not performing, which may well be the case, but we'll get to that later. It's actually so that people know where they are in the project, so that people can see where the progress is at, right?
Exactly. All of this kind of work, this knowledge work, whether it's development or design, it's hard to get a read on where you're at in the process. And I think inspection, and that's what I call it, when you sit down with someone and actually just look at the work, look at the code, look at the software, whatever it is, that's inspection. And without inspection, you're left with just really vague ideas from the person doing the work, usually that are overly optimistic, right? Like, oh, I'm probably like almost done. I don't know what that means. I don't know how you put almost on a Gantt chart or on a calendar.
At least they're explaining it to a client.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and who here hasn't said to the client, I'm almost done, knowing full well that you're really not almost done. You just don't want to face what it would mean to say, I've barely started. And so you know, we'll just hedge things a little bit. So as managers, as owners of companies, we can't afford the luxury to just hear things that are very vague, like I'm almost done, or I bet I'm halfway there. We need to sit down and look at things, talk with our people, and give them feedback, because during that discussion, this is not a time for you to just rip the design or the code apart, but this is a time for you to critically think about what the client needs and make sure that the person who's doing the work understands exactly what they need to do. Yeah, this is not their expression of art. This is your work for a client.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, obviously after the agency, the first person is going to be blamed for any of these sort of potential mistakes or errors are going to be, you know, the staff members, you know, or the contractors or whatever the case might be. So, you've talked about the need to really sort of communicate clearly and sort of regularly. Are there any kind of processes that managers can actually put in place to help aid this?
You know, there are. The ones that come to mind are, there's just a few I think that you can get a tremendous amount of traction from. The first is, you should have a weekly private one-on-one meeting with each person that works for you or any active contractors on a team. And that means over Skype or, you know, over a telephone or in person if you can. You need to sit down and talk with that person. Because in the end, the thing that turns out to be the most motivating to the people that work for you, the thing that brings them the most job satisfaction or that affects their job satisfaction and their job performance the most, is their relationship with you. Mm-hmm. And I realize that feels really counterintuitive, but I'll bet every person here listening has had a bad boss at one time or another. And they probably, if you can sit back and remember, how did you feel about the entire company when you had a bad boss? How did you feel about the work? Well, studies show you probably felt pretty crummy. You probably didn't feel engaged. You probably didn't give it your all. And we need people to be engaged, and we need people to be honest and give us feedback. And so the best way to do that is to create a really, really good relationship. And that starts with interpersonal discussions privately in these one-on-one meetings. I do them regularly and consistently. And yeah, we talk about work. It's not just like a, hey, how you doing? Like, how'd you like the sports game last night? It's a work-related relationship, so it's a work-related meeting, but it's held in a way that is behind closed doors and done such that it really builds great relationships with your people. And the second thing is, I think, is right at the beginning when you hire somebody, you are at an amazingly pivotal point of the relationship. And by hire, I could mean contract, so I'll just use those phrases mm-hmm. interchangeably. But you know, every time we bring somebody on, they are really excited to work with us, right? And we are really excited to work with them. In fact, oftentimes we think, oh, this is going to be, this gal is going to be different. This is going to be great. You know, we're really enthusiastic and everything's great. And well, until we start poorly managing, eroding the relationship, not setting good expectations, acting in a passive-aggressive way. And so what we want to do is we want to get on top of that. And we want to say from day one with a new person, you want to check in, for example, I actually check in every day for the first 2 weeks at the end of shift with every new person on my team. And that means we will have a mini one-on-one for 10 minutes at the end of every working day. Because my goal is to quickly establish communication patterns to let them know that I want them to talk to me and that I need to talk to them and that our working relationship is of utmost importance to me.
So these daily meetings for the first 2 weeks, are they strictly work orientated, like actually what they've been doing throughout the day? Or again, are they a mix of how was your day and also, you know, where are you in that project? Or
it's always a mix for me, because I always include an interpersonal, you know, how was your day? do you have any questions about working here or working with me or whatever it is? And then also, yeah, let's talk about the project you're on. Do you have any roadblocks? Are you frustrated? Do you think it's going to accomplish the goals? In your experience, is this the right direction to get to what the client wants? Starting to have those conversations really opens up a space for them to bring their whole brain, their whole vast experience to the work, rather than just thinking, oh, my job is to type code, or my job is to draw pictures, or like, because oftentimes as doers, we want an expansive relationship with our boss. We want to bring all of our background and our ideas, but we feel like, oh, I'm just the coder, or I'm just the designer, and I can't affect these other things. So if you want people to bring all of their excitement and enthusiasm, you've got to open that door. They won't just walk through it and assume that you want that kind of working relationship.
And do you think a lot of employers at agencies fail to sort of communicate these things in the initial, should we say, interviews or meetings for potential new staff?
Yeah, I think interviews are always very aspirational. A lot of times core value documents get passed around. They talk about how collaborative they are and what a good working environment they want to have. A lot of it's done, I think, with the right intention. But the reality is when the person gets there, it feels like they've went to work for a different company. I mean, nobody interviews and say, yeah, we really expect 65-hour weeks and we don't want to hear your opinions on the overall project. We just want you to crank out homepage designs. I don't think anybody would take that job, right?
No, I don't think so, no.
So while the interview sounds really good, once they get in there, they get put into a cubicle, either virtual or real, and they find that they're just given tasks and nobody wants their input on the bigger things. And they quickly realize that they feel like a cog, just a spinning part in a very large machine that nobody really cares about. And so if you check in with your person, this new person, every day at the end of shift for the first 2 weeks, and if even all you make it about is them, right? If all you're asking is, how do you feel about the job? How do you think we're doing things? How do you feel about the project? What could we do differently? You know, you really give them a sense that you care about them personally. And in the end, you actually do have to care about them. If you don't, you probably shouldn't be managing.
Yeah, and I think that's very sort of closely related to another aspect is the whole sort of feedback loop. For anyone who does have staff and works with contractors, as you said, they tend to sort of sit down, get their head down and get on with the job because that's, you know, what they feel is expected of them. And they're very scared to actually sort of stand up, shall we say, and give any feedback on what's, you know, going on in the workplace with what they're doing, with the rest of the team, with perhaps the way things, you know, are being run. I mean, what sort of things can we be doing to try and get that honest feedback from, you know, the people we're paying to sort of basically, you know, grow our businesses?
Yeah, that's such a great question. First, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's not that they don't have feedback, right? It's not that they don't have anything to say. It's that they're afraid of saying it. And the fundamental reason why they're afraid of saying it is because our culture, and we've learned since we were small children, that you don't say certain things and you don't reveal everything to people in higher positions of power than you. Right? Whether it's teachers or policemen, government officials, your parents, there are things you will tell your friends all day long that you won't tell the person that really needs to hear it. Mm-hmm. And that's because that person who really needs to hear it hasn't made it safe for you to do so. So I think that's actually the responsibility of you as the owner or manager is to create a safe environment, and you've got to go out and solicit feedback. And this is one of the first things you can do when you bring on somebody is if you're talking with them regularly, ask them, what could I do better? You can't just ask them once, though. They'll never say anything the first 3 or 4 times because they think you're just like every other boss who might ask them and then maybe penalize them, right? If they don't like what they hear. You've got to continue to ask regularly. And then the other thing is ask in different ways. Oftentimes I will ask not just, how can I do better? Or what feedback do you have for me? Those are cause the person to have to give really direct answers. Instead, I'll say, boy, how do you think you would have handled that situation? Or how could we have gotten a better outcome in this situation? Or what do you think I could have done differently over here? What that does is that puts you and the other person on the same side of the table and kind of triangulates where you're both looking at this third thing, the situation. Now they can talk more freely about the situation because it's not like telling you you did something wrong. It's like saying, oh, well, in that situation, I might have done X. Just that alone is feedback, hearing how they would have approached something. You've got to, of course, receive this feedback very well. And typically that means not having any kind of hint of negative reaction or defensiveness, right? If you were to say, well, I didn't do that because, of course, you know, that'd be stupid, right? Why would you do that in this situation? I can guarantee you'll never get feedback again, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't be defensive. You've got to make sure that you receive that feedback in a way that is both honest but preserves the relationship and the environment where people are able and willing to tell you things.
Okay. I think anybody sort of who's had this experience, you know, of hiring full-time staff, permanent staff, and also contractors, probably perhaps maybe more so contractors, because, well, it's a completely different game, isn't it?
It is.
What about when things just aren't working out for you? I mean, what are some of the red flags or the telltale signs that employers, you know, should be looking for, or should be either looking for or shouldn't ignore if they appear?
Yeah, that's such an important thing. The first thing is, as the manager, the boss, whatever you want to call yourself, you've got to set clear expectations about what happens next. So oftentimes I will give a contractor a piece of work, whether I've worked with them for a long time or not. And when I was first doing this, I would give them a project like, oh, I need a new theme for Drupal. Here's the theme. Here's the design. Let me know when it's done. Now, that might sound like a perfectly reasonable thing to say, but I've sure left out a lot of expectations. Like in my head, I sure hope that he'll get back to me in the next 2 to 3 days and give me a status update. Well, I didn't say that. I also leave it entirely in his responsibility or hers to define what done means, right? As so, though somehow, is it a little done or a lot done? And I have not set any sort of check-in points or milestones for the project. So that's one of the first things I do, is I always tell them when we're going to talk again and ask them what they expect they can have done by the next time we talk. And I usually try and make it maybe 2 days out if it's a contractor that's remote that's working on a project. So I want to talk with that person every couple days. And I do this because I can't afford for somebody to go off and decide that they got too busy for 2 weeks to work on my Drupal theme and the project's due in 3 weeks. That just doesn't work for me. That's too much risk. So one of the red flags, though, is if the person you're managing doesn't show up for one of those check-ins, doesn't call or email, isn't communicating, that's a huge red flag, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing is, if they come to the check-in and you're there to inspect work and just do a quick review, and they don't have anything to show, that's a pretty big red flag, right? So I set up these little, I call them micro promises, and then I look for them to keep the micro promises. And again, I don't say to the person, in 2 days, I want you to have finished the homepage. What I say is, what can you have done in 2 days? I listen. I write down what they say, that's their promise to me, and I say, great, I'll look for that in 2 days. And when I've started doing that, I've also found that people tend to really want to keep that promise, so I get better results as well. They've committed to doing something. I haven't pushed on them the idea of an unreasonable amount of work, which we're almost all allergic to.
Sure.
So red flags, like they just go dark. I'd much rather know after 2 days that they were the kind of contractor that went dark than after 2 weeks. And I don't tolerate that kind of poor communication. I will literally cut the contract very quickly and look for someone else, or have someone else waiting in the wings in case it doesn't work out. And I tell them that up front. I say, I have a zero tolerance to bad communication. So if you decide that you're not going to show up to a meeting or, you know, whatever, then we're just not going to be in business together anymore. And I try and be really fair by letting them know that up front. Another red flag that I think you could imagine is when you sit down to look at the work, it doesn't really resemble anything like you expected. Does that make sense?
In terms of quality or in terms of results or?
Well, I would say it's all those things. Whatever you expected, if it doesn't look like it, that's a red flag. Now, you can ask yourself, did I do a good job of communicating? If not, you need to make sure that you're doing a better job. But also, have you checked that person's understanding of the work? And that's where oftentimes it's what I see too often, Nathan, is agency owners will say, well, it's not like I would have done it, but I want to give that person the freedom to really express themselves. I don't really agree with that philosophy. If you set clear expectations and they go in a different direction, it's your job to reset expectations and say, no, we're back over here. You know, if you want to go create high art, you do that on your own time. All I need is this thing done, and we've made promises to the client, and this is how we need to do it. Okay. So having an aligning or a resetting conversation once or twice, but if the person continually goes in different directions and you cannot seem to get them aligned with you, it's probably not a good fit.
So I know that, you know, sometimes a bad employee, which is probably not a great way of putting it at all, but will always slip through the net regardless of how well you interview, regardless of what you might think or that feeling you have about them. But I imagine that there must be some kind of system or something we can do or change or put in place to try and minimize these poor experiences with staff, you know? I mean, what else? I think a lot of hiring managers, the first thing they look for is that technical prowess, you know, because they have to fill that role. They're looking for a developer who's working in Ruby, or they're looking for a designer, and the designer needs to be capable in Sketch and Photoshop, whatever. Apart from that technical prowess, what things should we be looking for in the interview process?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And this is a huge mistake that not just agencies and freelancers make, but big companies think about people as resources. I need a Ruby developer, I need a Photoshop person, I need an Angular gal, whatever it is, they've already kind of pigeonholed. And the way they describe them talks about what they think is their primary value, right? A Ruby developer. Well, I don't care if they're nice as long as they can do Ruby. The reality is people fall down and projects go south, not because they don't know enough Ruby, but because they're poor communicators, they don't want to really have a relationship, they're not engaged, they're burned out from their last job, all kinds of stuff. So you've got to test for people's relationship skills. You've got to find out if they're willing and interested in having a collaborative, close, personal business relationship with you, and if they have the skills to do so. And you've got to make sure that in the interview, you communicate that you're looking for trusted partners. You're not just looking for someone to do Ruby. You're looking for someone who can bring their whole brain to the project. I can't tell you the number of times I've heard late in a project from a developer, yeah, I didn't think this was going to work. I would never have approached it this way. And I'll say, well, why didn't you say so? Well, I'm just the coder. Okay, that's not the kind of people I want to have on my team. But that doesn't really talk to process. So I do think that we need to value these relational attributes more and make sure that we can actually have some good, deep conversations in the interview. But I think the other thing is I like to treat interviews as a mini project. In the same way as I talked about with the contractor, setting a clear expectation as to what will happen next and what I expect from them and letting them make promises, I do the same thing with an interview. For example, if I were to interview a developer, and we might have an initial first chat that went well, I would say, I'd like to see some samples of your code. When can you send me those? You know, and I will write down, he will say, oh, or she will say, I'll do that by Thursday. And I'll reiterate, okay, by Thursday, I'll have samples of that code. How will you send it to me? Oh, I'll share it with you on GitHub. Okay. And I'll write these things down because I consider every one of these a promise. And I'll do that a couple of different times. Maybe the next phase is, oh, I'd like you to come in for a working interview, or I'd like you to provide me with references. Whatever it is, I usually try and have four or five places where I can just test and see if that person's going to keep their promises. Little tiny promises, like sending me code by Thursday. I can't tell you the number of times I get disappointed when I don't get code by Thursday. And for me, I'm really glad I found out before I put them on a client project that they weren't reliable. And I just simply say, you know, if Friday comes, I say, boy, I was really sad to see I didn't see your code by Thursday. I'm sorry, it's not going to work out. And we move on. I don't value the technical skills inappropriately high, realizing that promises and relational skills are actually the things that really make or break a project.
Yeah, I think a lot of agencies are certainly very quick to jump into that technical test, sending over that in whatever format it might be, and then having that sort of initial interview, and then that's it, you know, that they will sort of do this for however many candidates and then make that decision. I really like the idea of those little micro promises.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I get disappointed a lot. And I've had people say, you're being unreasonable. Right? I'd never go through that process. And I say, okay, well, you don't have to. It's up to you if you want to. But since I'm looking for people who are dependable, especially contractors where I've struggled with getting them that are dependable, I test for dependability, communication skills, very early on in the process. If somebody emails me Thursday morning and says, Marcus, I just didn't get a chance and I'm going to be out today because my wife is ill, can I get you that code on Friday? I'll say, yeah, okay. You know, I'll give you one more chance, but it's when I hear nothing. That's when, as an owner, I can't do anything with nothing. I have to start making some assumptions and I have to start doing risk mitigation for my client.
I can imagine that the great majority of agency owners or people who are hiring would take reliable over a superstar designer or developer any day of the week.
Any day of the week. That's exactly right. All we really want is people who are reliable, show up, keep their promises, aren't jerks. And you know what? If they're just pretty good at their job from a technical or design perspective, we're totally willing to work with that and to help them grow into being great. But we can't train people to be dependable. That is almost always a failing proposition.
Well, I think there's some fantastic advice there. And I particularly like the idea of those micro promises and sort of putting the onus on them to sort of promise what they're going to deliver, instead of you saying, I expect this by such and such a date. And like you said, you leave the sort of the responsibility on their shoulders, so to speak. They feel responsible. They want to deliver. And of course, if they do let you down, well, then it's time to perhaps take a fresh look at the relationship. But I really like that advice. So I know that, you know, you've got a bunch of great material over on your site on how to hire the right contractors and how to sort of run a successful software team. So, you know, if folks want to find out more about, you know, actually what you do and how perhaps you could help, where's the best place to go?
I write and have workshops and things like that at marcusblankenship.com. I'm putting together some new offerings this fall that are small group things for people who want to build great client relationships and want to really improve their teams. So I'll be putting that out on the site. I can also send you some links. I've done webinars on the hiring process I described. I've done webinars on getting feedback from developers. And so I can send those links. You can make them part of the show notes.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Marcus, for taking the time to talk to us today. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we can get you back on again in the future. Maybe we can attack this from perhaps a different angle and help managers again in another area of running their agencies.
I'd love to. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Marcus. Cheers. Well, that's all for our first episode of the Creative Business Podcast. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Marcus. I personally think there's some fantastic advice in there for anybody who has to run a team, specifically a software team. Be sure to go and check out his website and see what he has to offer over there. He's a lovely guy, and I'm sure he'd be only too happy to help you out in any way that he can. If you've enjoyed the podcast today, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a couple of seconds to jump over to iTunes and leave a review for us there. You know, reviews help us climb up the charts and get seen by more people, and that way more people can find out about what we're trying to do here at the Creative Business Podcast. Take a couple of seconds, just click on those stars, and if you want to leave a couple of words as well, that would be fantastic. Really appreciate it. I'll be back again same time next week with another new episode and another fantastic new interview. Until then, good luck.